What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to What Women Must Know, a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman, and I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I am also the author of several books on women's holistic health. I have not just one, but two radio shows on this station, and the other show I invite you to come and listen to is called The Women's Healing Circle every Sunday at 4 p.m. I also write for numerous magazines. I'm the senior editor for Total Health magazine and lecture all over the world on many aspects of holistic health and healing. So, as always, it's a delight to be with you on this show every Monday. And I also want to remind everyone, if you have not yet visited my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com, I certainly encourage you to have a look. You can go there and opt in, put your name and email address, and then you will get all my free special reports on the important information that women must know. And by the way, I also have an articles page that has many, many, many of my articles, my published articles, and teleclasses that are also freely available to help educate you and empower you so you can make truly informed decisions regarding your health and hormonal balance. So, having said that, I want to talk about the topic we will be discussing today. You know, we are, I don't know whether it's more than ever, but it certainly seems that way. We are besieged. We've got all sorts of challenges and stresses. We've got financial concerns. We're dealing with the health of ourselves and our family. We're, you know, up against a time of change. And as always, it can create a tremendous amount of stress and lead us down a path of feeling overwhelmed and, well, I guess you could say unhappy with ourselves and with life. So what are we going to do? How can we take charge of ourselves, step into a place where we can find a resilience and a joie de vie again, and a joy, really, no matter what's going on around us? Does that sound like an impossible task, a little too much to ask of us in this day and age? Well, my guest today doesn't think so. In fact, he teaches people how to reconnect to that place which we all have waiting for us to, and I guess, switch on. So that's the topic today, Awakening Joy. It also is the name of the book of my guest. James Barris is a very inspirational man. He has been teaching meditation since 1978 and the Awakening Joy class since 2003. Thousands have taken the course. He leads retreats, workshops, and classes in the U.S. and further afield, and is the founding teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Northern California, which is a very renowned meditation center. So James is going to be talking to us about what he is teaching, some of the keys that he has personally experienced and now makes available in his teachings to help us all reconnect to a place we have waiting for us if we just know how to get back there, and that's a place called joy. I'd like to read a little bit from the beginning of the book, which I found really interesting, and then we'll introduce James to everybody. So in the introduction of the book, it starts by talking about a person named Warren, who was, by his own admission, a pessimist. And you're looking at someone who tends to see the downside of things, he said. And in the course that he participated, Awakening Joy, he seemed to be the only one that was not going to reap the benefits and shift into that more peaceful, joyful place within himself. And then as the introduction goes on, this is what happens. Then one evening, he arrived at class with a noticeably different expression on his face. I was curious to hear what had happened. We started the class with each person reporting how the practices I gave as homework had been going since our previous meeting. To my surprise and delight, when Warren's turn came, he told us that something quite unexpected seemed to be happening to him. As I was driving into the city, he started, there was a whole lot of really slow traffic. I tend to get frustrated when I'm caught in that, and I started, as I often do, thinking about everything that's wrong in our society. I was really getting on a roll. We all nodded our heads, easily identifying with the scene. Warren continued, slowly speaking the words, as if amazed that they were coming out of his mouth. Suddenly, I stopped and said to myself, now wait a minute, is there any joy here? I saw that I could just switch the channel. I looked out and I saw the water and the San Francisco Bay. I looked up and it was a clear day. I opened my sunroof and I said to myself, you know, it's not so bad. I realized there is a switch that I'm starting to find that I didn't know was there before. He looked up at us and smiled as if to say, go figure. At that moment, I knew that the tools in the Awakening Joy course had undeniable potential to unlock joy. Well, that was a great story, James, don't you think?
I love it.
You know, I think that we are at a point where when we try to fix things on the outside, we always are going to be thwarted. We may have times they work and accomplish whatever we're after, and times when we feel it's all been taken away. So it appears that you can't really control what's happening outside you, but you've got a key to help control what's happening inside you.
That's exactly the point, that outside circumstances are beyond our control, and what's happening is less important than how we're relating to what's happening, and our attitude and our inclination towards well-being is within us if we choose it.
You know, this is so profound, and I am particularly lauding the praises of what you're doing, because this is a path that I have been traveling personally for many, 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 many years, decades, actually. And it's I'm really happy to announce that I've arrived at a place where I actually experience that place inside. You know, call it joy, contentment, acceptance, allowing life to be what it is. However you define it, I just find I can access that more and more. And it's such a nice space to visit with inside myself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the miracle, that no matter where you are as you're beginning this, if you decide, if you face in the right direction, decide to go for more well-being and have some tools or strategies that that will actually help cultivate that it's possible to develop it.
And that's for everyone, no matter what they've been through, no matter where they come from, no matter what their religious orientation is. None of that matters at all, does it?
No, not at all. It starts with the decision to activate that place inside of you that always is looking to be happy. Every one of us wants to be happy. Even the people who say, I don't want to be happy, I feel like being grumpy. Well, that's their way of being happy. But we all are looking for that, whether you call it joy, as you say, or contentment, or well-being. For me, the word well-being really is at the heart of it. We just need to know how to get there, but there's a place that's rooting for that for us, and it's just activating that.
So before we go into some of the key things that you have incorporated in your book and in your courses, I just want to ask you, you've been involved with meditation for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get there? How did you find meditation as a path for your life and creating a really well-known, successful meditation retreat center, which also is no easy feat?
Well, I could never have planned any of it. I started, as many people do, looking for answers for myself because I was not a happy camper growing up. I had passion and I loved intensity, but I seemed to be more focused on what could go wrong and being very insecure and not liking myself very, very much. And so I was looking for answers. And one book, as many people in my generation found was helpful, was a book called Be Here Now, written by a man named Ram Dass. And it had a huge impact on me. And he was teaching at part of a summer program in Boulder, Colorado in 1974 at this place called Naropa Institute. I'd been carrying around that book around like a Bible for a couple of years, and I wanted to go out there and meet him. I had also started some transcendental meditation, which was what the Beatles were into, and I figured if it was good enough for John Lennon, it was good enough for me, because he was my guy. And when I met Ram Dass, I asked him about meditation, and he said to check out this mindfulness meditation and to take a class taught by a person who has been my main teacher, Joseph Goldstein. And that was it. Joseph was saying, it's actually possible to not be run by your neurotic thought patterns. And that had never crossed my mind as an option before. And I believed not only what he was saying, but the energy that was coming from him. And I said, I am going for it. And I just really wanted to deepen that practice. And out of that grew wanting to share it with others when I found how beneficial it was for me.
You know, that book by Ram Dass, Be Here Now, you won't believe it, but I actually was sitting in my mud hut in South India reading that book.
Really?
Many years ago. And it was equally profound for me when I read that book. It just felt like it just opened something. It was amazing.
Yeah, well, it reached a lot of
people. We must be in that generation, James, when all that was going on. It seemed to touch a lot of people.
Oh yeah, that was huge. And one of the great delights in the Awakening Joy book that I've come out is that Ram Dass wrote the preface to it, so it's kind of a full circle. And I just wanted to get his blessing on that. And we've known each other over the years, so it's particularly a joyful aspect of the book.
Okay, so you were. You know, you found your way to this path of meditation, and did it work for you?
Oh, yeah, it worked tremendously. I learned how to understand my mind, not take my thoughts quite so seriously, find a place of centeredness inside. And I had what's called a long honeymoon period where I just found what I was looking for and got some connection with a place that was beyond my mental chatter. But then at some point I became very serious about my spiritual practice, dead serious, overly serious. And for a little while I lost my joy. And that was when I not only wanted to have the peace that meditation could offer, but see what the teachings had to say about happiness and where I had gone wrong. And when I looked at those teachings, there were some very profound principles that I decided to not only practice in earnest and consciously for myself, but to put them in an accessible way that whether or not you're a meditator, that you could practice them and reap the benefits.
You know, I think before we carry this conversation any further, it's really important to define meditation so people get the definition that you are wanting them to use rather than some preconceived ideas that are out there wafting around. So why don't you just define meditation as you refer to it?
Sure, sure. And meditation is just one aspect of this awakening joy, but it is a cornerstone because it helps you get clear on what goes on inside. The meditation that I'm most grateful for and that I teach is called mindfulness meditation or insight meditation. And it is simply being present for your life. It's knowing what's happening right now, if you're sitting, knowing that you're sitting, knowing that you're breathing, knowing that you're thinking or hearing sound. It's noticing what's here without getting caught in your judgments about how you like things to be, but just calling it like it is. So it really comes down to a non-judgmental awareness. And what that does is has a profound effect on developing clarity, opening the heart, developing compassion and love and kindness, and affects in many, many different ways. But it simply comes down to seeing things clearly and getting beyond the chatter in your mind, which is where we normally live in our mental realm, to a place of deeper connection.
And it really has nothing to do with any religious beliefs, affiliations. I mean, you can have any orientation that you want, and this is just a tool that can be used and incorporated into any religion or spiritual path, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, these days, mindfulness, which has been on the cover of Newsweek and Time magazine and throughout the mainstream healthcare, mindfulness-based stress reduction is taught in Kaiser and health clinics around the country, and is found to be efficient in business and brought to schools, kids in inner city Oakland, 8,000 kids have learned mindfulness, and it's no religious affiliation. At our center, Spirit Rock, there's rabbis and ministers and people of all faiths that come to practice this. It comes out of the particular practice. It comes out of, and just should say in all disclosure, it comes out of this philosophy, the kind of meditation. But you don't have to be a Buddhist. In fact, the Buddha wasn't a Buddhist. He just taught being awake. And so this is something that is applicable to anyone without any kind of dogma or doctrine at all.
Exactly. It's just a way of having more mastery in one's life, I think I would put it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I never thought in my early years when I was really overwhelmed with all these conflicting emotions and accompanying thoughts of not being good enough and variations on that theme, I never really thought I would get to the place where I could have the feelings and have the thoughts but be the observer of them. So I wasn't tied up in them. I wasn't identifying with them. People told me, you know, I'm not my thoughts and I'm not my feelings, and that just made no sense back then. But it has come to be a reality for me,
and
which is what we need to do. I mean, it seems that the journey and the goal of finding more inner peace requires you to be the observer rather than react to your thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've been teaching beginning classes for over 30 years, and each time I do, it's so exciting to see a room full of people who are maybe slightly anxious about what they're getting into, who see with an amazing appreciation how turning the lens inward instead of looking outward, but turning the lens inward and observing your mind, observing your body, feeling all the feelings that are there with a kind awareness just radically transforms your relationship to yourself and to life.
Yeah. Yeah, how exciting. So let's move into some of those 10 steps that you have in your book, Awakening Joy, so we can start taking this journey with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, as we go into the steps, there are a couple of principles that all the steps are based on. One is first to know where real happiness lies, and that has to do with what are called wholesome states or healthy states, states of well-being that are expansive, whether it's kindness or generosity or gratitude or patience or compassion. All of those are qualities that open the heart, open the body physically, actually, open the mind, that are antithetical, that are the opposite of unhealthy states, stressful states like anger, jealousy, obsession, confusion. All of those are contracting states. So these 10 steps all have to do with wholesome states that open us up. Along with those wholesome states, there is a gladness that naturally accompanies them. If you're in the middle of a generous act, a random act of kindness or generosity, it feels good, right? And the principle of the Awakening Joy course and book and these teachings, what I try to convey, is to not miss that gladness. You might know, oh yeah, I'm being generous, okay, that's the way I'm supposed to be, or, oh, I'm feeling pretty good now. But to turn your attention to actually take in the gladness and let it register in your body and in your mind, that deepens the access to that well-being. And in fact, there's neuroscience corroborates this, where if you take in moments of well-being, one of my neuroscience friends, Rick Hansen, says, you know, he has a prescription, if you take in 30 seconds, if you're feeling good, really take it in and feel the landscape in your body and in your mind. Do that 6 times in a day. That's 3 minutes. I know that's a lot. But if you do that over a 2-week period, you'll notice a dramatic shift in your general level of well-being, because your brain is starting to rewire and look for those moments of well-being. And
well, that's
if you,
great. Oh, great. Can we just say that again so
sure.
People missed it?
Sure.
Just give us that little prescription. That's a great little practice.
When you're feeling good, rather than just knowing, oh, I'm feeling good, to really take it in and feel the landscape, if you do that for 30 seconds, 6 times in a day, and do that for 2 weeks, you will notice a dramatic shift in your well-being. That's very doable, right? Because what it's doing is it's counteracting how we normally scan our horizon. In neuroscience, if you're interested in seeing how it works, our brain has this little almond-shaped cluster of neurons called the amygdala in it. And the amygdala scans the horizon for what could go wrong. It's a survival mechanism. It's kept us alive, and it's a very good thing that we have it. But often we have overactive amygdalas, and we're looking for the next thing that could go wrong, and often missing all the things that are going right. So this starts to retrain your brain to look for what's going right, and that is a radical shift.
Oh, how interesting. So we actually are rewiring our brain in a sense by doing a simple little thing like that.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And another neuroscience axiom says neurons that fire together wire together, that you keep on inclining the mind towards a particular habit, and that's the neural pathways that get set up. Now, of course, we've had other neural pathways that we've practiced for a lifetime, so this is not an instant kind of a thing. Oh, sure, I'll just all of a sudden now just notice all the good things. It takes time, but if you're patient and you're inclining towards that intention, it starts to shift, like you've discovered after all of those years that you've changed from how you were decades ago. You're just inclining because you started to look for another way to take in life.
Yes, absolutely. And I have a couple of thoughts, and I'll run them by you. First of all, we're hearing more and more about the consequences of multitasking. And basically what we're starting to realize is that our brain really isn't designed to multitask for a long period of time anyway. So we're on the phone, we're checking our emails, we're cleaning the desk or whatever else is all going on simultaneously, which is what we've come to do. But in actual fact, that is debilitating to our awareness and an optimal brain function. So what you're saying by giving that 30 seconds of just paying attention, putting your awareness on what feeling good is, it just might be the sunshine on your, on your body, that is taking us to be 100% focused about what we are in this moment. So do you want to comment on your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. When people come to Spirit Rock and they do meditation retreats, the primary instruction, as I often say, is we're all very good at multitasking. Here's the challenge. Try to unitask. Try to do one thing at a time, because in that focus, you are connecting fully in a much deeper way. The other way that we usually go about our world, like you say, is a prescription for stress. Because although it seems like it's productive, it's just very scattered and starts to jangle us. And if we do that over time, over the course of a whole day or days or weeks or it can be a lifetime, we don't really settle in and connect with life and connect with ourselves. When you do take a few moments, like if you're taking a few moments and just sipping a cup of tea, and really there with it. Ah, how relaxing it is, Or if you're even eating a good meal and instead of thinking about the next thing, actually tasting your food, wow, how radical that is. And you actually enjoy it more. Think of how many meals have gone down your esophagus and it just kind of gone down the hatch and you haven't been there for it. Why not be there for all the amazingly wonderful things in life? So this being present, this mindfulness is really the key to living a full and happy life.
And it's something that we have to intentionally practice because to me, it's one of those secrets that comes in the manual of life that we were never given.
Although probably when we were little kids, I sometimes say this in classes, we were given the secret. When you were a kid, you were probably told, pay attention, right? Pay attention, Cheryl, right? And be nice. Well, that's basically it. Pay attention and be nice is the prescription in kindergarten and the prescription for a happy life. It just takes practice to really pay attention. And then the being nice, letting the kindness come out of you, is actually a natural outflow of that. And that's because that's what wants to come out when we're not stressed.
Oh, that's great. Well, listen, we're going to take a break, James, and when we come back, let's look at some of those steps that you have in your book, Awakening Joy, and
sure,
we can kind of get some ideas of what we can start practicing. So hang in there, And you've been listening to What Women Must Know with me, Dr. Cheryl Selman. We're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back with my guest today, James Paris. 1 second.
Houston, we have a problem.
Christiane Brown. In today's 24-hour news cycle, most people get about a minute of real truth. Not on the Solution Zone. Every week, I bring in America's best-known activists, bloggers, authors, and politicians to uncover the hidden issues that help separate the truth from the spin.
The Solution Zone with Christiane Brown, every Wednesday at 3 on Progressive Radio Network.
Progressives, this is Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front. I hope you've been enjoying the news I'm bringing you hot off the press, so to speak, like behind-the-scenes stories and insider scoop from Al Gore's recent climate conference. I know the Greenistas and love introducing the most informative and inspiring experts on the Green Front every week. So join me as we learn more about our environment and what we can do to turn it around.
The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, every Wednesday at 2 on the Progressive Radio Network.
Let your imagination fly. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Take a trip with me through the literary landscape of Writer's Voice. Join the tour and the conversation as we talk with writers of all genres about matters that move us and make us think. Right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Saturday at noon.
Hello, everybody. This is Richard Martin of Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. I'm on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com twice a week on Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to guide you and hold your hand through the worst economic catastrophe of all time. I predicted this right here on PRN back in 2005, along with the housing meltdown. Listen in and hear how this calamity is about to get much worse, and hear me suggest ways in which you can sidestep a large part of the horror. Call in and have your questions answered in real time. Let's see this thing through together. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com hosts my show Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. EST right here.
This is Mitchell J. Raven to tell you that we have two new time slots. Every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Raven as together we create a better world.
Progressive Radio Network. Information for the independent mind.
We're back. Thank you for joining us. This is What Women Must Know with your host, me, Dr. Cheryl Selman, and my very special guest today, James Barris, who is the author of a wonderful book called Awakening Joy, 10 Steps That Will Put You on the Road to Real Happiness. So we were about to explore some of those steps in your program, and I'll just let you kind of share the ones that you think are the most appropriate to talk about today.
Okay. Yeah. No, there's 10 to pick, and they're all, I think, very potent ways to access joy and well-being. It starts with the first one, the intention to be happy, or the intention to open up to as much well-being as we can. That decision will set everything else in motion. Now, most of us do want to be happy, or as they say, everyone wants to be happy, but most of us, many postpone it, saying, when I become successful, then I'll be happy, or when I make a lot of money, then I'll be happy, or when I meet the right person, then I'll be happy, or get the right job, but not realizing that it's about living your life right now. And so to make that heartfelt decision to do your best to be here and be present for your life and open up to as much goodness as there is inside and around, that is a key that sets everything in motion. That leads to the second step, which is, as we were talking about earlier, being present, being mindful. That is not getting lost in your head, but to really see what's going on. Like right now, it's so easy to get caught in the thoughts that we have. Right now, take a moment and turn to some sense door, like sounds, or the sound of my voice, or sensations in the body, or images in front of you, and just notice what's here right now. That connection will bring you into the present moment. And you can go one further and appreciate what's here in the present moment. Like, wow, I'm alive. That's pretty amazing. Or there's a brain that can think, or a heart that can feel. So learning more and more to be present is a key. And what it does is that you can then apply that presence to those moments of well-being. And now I'll take you through a little exercise to show you what I mean, if that's okay.
Oh, sure.
And this is how to apply mindfulness to those other steps. So the third step is gratitude, which is a great source of well-being if we see all the blessings in our life. So here's a simple exercise using gratitude and applying mindfulness to it. Just for a moment, think of somebody or something in your life that you're grateful for. It could be a friend, or it could be a pet, or somebody who just opens you up, who's a real blessing in your life, or some wonderful circumstance. And as you think of them, have an image of either that person or that situation. And as you have the image, just give a very simple, sincere thank you silently to that person or to life. Just thank you. And as you do, let yourself really feel that feeling of gratitude. Just relax into it and let it touch you. That's being mindful of the feeling of gratitude. What's that like?
Well, it certainly brings you back into, you know, a present awareness. You know, you're not out there worrying about things. You know, you actually are, I guess you would say, disciplining. You know, you're putting your focus, you're training yourself to have your awareness on a pleasurable or peaceful or, as you said, grateful moment that lightens you up a bit.
Yeah, well, it lightens you up, and it's also it's connecting with all the goodness around you instead of that amygdala seeing what's wrong. It's, oh, yeah, there's this, and it opens you up. That can have a huge impact on your well-being. There's a study that was done where these people who were self-described as depressed over the course of a 5-week period wrote down what they were grateful for, 3 things that they were grateful for each day for 5 weeks. And at the end, there was a 92% decrease in depression and a 94% increase in happiness.
That's amazing.
It's very powerful. All you're doing is just seeing what's here already, and you're just shining your light on that. So, and it can have a very potent impact, but even if you aren't used to doing this. My favorite story in the book is about my mother. I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but my mom, who just turned 92, and who is, her lifetime has been one of complaining. We have a great relationship. She's very, very funny. And in fact, there's a YouTube video of her. If you look at Confessions of a Jewish Mother, How My Son Ruined My Life, where she was complaining her whole life. And I came down to visit her in L.A. and shared some gratitude research. And she said, that's very impressive. I said, Mom, wouldn't it be great if you learned gratitude, you know, gratitude practice? And she said, it would be very good, dear, but, you know, I've been doing it this way for a long time, and I don't think there's much hope. And I said, Mom, if you could, would you change? She said, yeah, if I could, I would. And I said, okay, every time you complain, I'll just remind you, and you say, and my life is very blessed. Because she said, I know I'm very blessed, but I just forget. Well, she miraculously, she played the game with me. We had a great time. And it took hold. And this is like 3 years later. She, almost every other sentence out of her mouth is how blessed we are. And she, the YouTube is saying how I ruined her life is that she was happy being a complainer and a kvetcher, as they say in Jewish, and she didn't know what to do with her happiness because she's so much happier now. So anybody can change. Gratitude is a huge tool towards making that change.
You know, what you said is so profound, and I just cannot emphasize enough that, you know, it's like going to the gym. If you want to build a happy muscle, if you want to build a joyful muscle in your brain, because it starts with rewiring, as you said, the overactive amygdala, you have to literally train every day to do that.
Exactly. It takes practice. You know, people say, "Oh, why should joy take effort?" But it does, because we have other kinds of habits. But it's well worth the effort. And once you get into it, you move out of the ruts in your mind and get another groove going. You know, like how somebody got their groove back. Well, you're getting grooves in your brain as you practice more and more, and it becomes a way that you naturally start to look at life.
You know, what's really fascinating, of course, meditation has been around for thousands of years, but now we have the neuroscience that actually demonstrates the kinds of changes that do occur in the brain as we employ some of these strategies and techniques. And it's verifying on a very scientific level that the alterations, the transformations that are occurring within our brain, but that gets translated into our perceptions and our behaviors and our health as well.
Exactly. That's how it's all there. What the perennial wisdom has been going on for thousands of years, and now science is is confirming, oh yeah, it really works. Yeah. So it takes practice, but it works. So
what would be your advice? I have, you know, I'm surrounded by many people in my life right now who are finding lots of challenges occurring one way or another. And, you know, what would you say to people that are experiencing difficulties, be it financial or health or relationship? You know, what's your advice to those people?
Right, and this is the fourth chapter in the book. After it's the next logical step. I put together after intention and mindfulness and gratitude, and then there's how do you deal with the hard stuff? Because life is filled with hard stuff, and if you're just pasting a smiley smile on your face, saying, "Oh, forget your troubles, come on, get happy," you're not going to. It's not going to take you very far. So the first thing is to realize this is part of life. And when you're going through a hard time, you can't force happiness. Sometimes people say, I'm trying so hard to be joyful. Well, that's not going to work. You can't try hard to be joyful. It's more like inviting it and allowing and not missing it when it's here. But when you do have a hard time, say you're going through some grieving, you've lost somebody, or some major shift in your life situation with finances or a job or relationship or whatever, you can't bypass that. You have to really let yourself feel the pain that you're going through, and using mindfulness, and I go into this in the book, using mindfulness to feel the pain without getting lost in the story, because you can perpetuate that story and that pain and define yourself by that story. But to really allow, be authentic and connected with what you're going through in manageable chunks of time, not so you're completely drowning in it. You have to find ways to nourish yourself too, so it's not the only thing that's happening in your life. You can remember maybe to count the blessings in your life. You can go out and move your body and feel your aliveness. Be out in nature. Exercise. Be with friends. Sing. One of the main things that I encourage people to do is to sing every day. Even if you're singing the blues, that's what the blues are for, to just kind of feel that life moving through you and opening up your throat, not getting so stuck. Besides that, when you're going through a hard period, there are moments of well-being, and to not miss those as well, instead of painting the whole thing bleak, notice those moments where you might smile, or you see some kids playing and it touches you, or you're with your a good friend or a loved one, or you're seeing a sunset, to really take those moments in so your amygdala doesn't just work over time and see all the things that are wrong. And then another thing that that I encourage people to reflect on is impermanence, that you've gone through hard times before. You will probably survive this. You'll probably laugh again. You'll probably enjoy life again. And to realize this is just part of your curriculum, to learn what you can learn and feel a connection with all the other people who go through hard times. It's one thing that deepens our compassion. So really, to learn ways to nourish yourself while you're going through a hard time, but not to pretend that it's not there, just not to get overwhelmed by it.
You know, I think that when we go through hard times, and hard times are inevitable, we all have those experiences in life, that's part of life, that's when you want to have these inner resources, if at all possible, mm-hmm. so you can make that journey through the hard times, you have resource resources within you that allow you to journey through that period of time as gracefully as possible.
Yeah, and the hard times are what reveal those sources. You wouldn't know you have that resilience or that inner strength unless you were challenged. It's like you said, going to the gym. You know, you have to get a bit sore before you get stronger. Well, in the same way, we go through what we often call growing pains. Those are the lessons, and those are the experiences that deepen our character and that show us, oh wow, I got through that. Amazing. And really help us grow stronger and stronger and trust that inner strength and resilience.
So if people listening are curious about the program you offer, can they follow it through picking up a copy of Awakening Joy? Are there other ways that they can begin to incorporate the concepts into an actual practice that they do?
Oh, the whole thing is to move from the theoretical to actually apply it and see for yourself that it works. So one, obviously, is the book, which I wrote with my dear friend and co-author, Shoshana Alexander, Awakening Joy, 10 Steps That Will Put You on the Road to Real Happiness. And the book is based on a course, an online course that I teach. It's live in Berkeley, but people take it from all over the world. And you can just either Google Awakening Joy or go to awakeningjoy.info. And it's a course that uses the principles in the book that anybody can do. And I'm really grateful that thousands of people have found the course beneficial. People can offer whatever they want. There's a suggested donation, but people can offer whatever they want as an alternative if their budget doesn't fit the $25 a month. But it's I want everybody to experience for themselves that you can practice this and actually open up that joy that's waiting for you to come out. You just have to have the tools and the techniques. And I also do travel around and teach workshops. I'm going to, you know, be my website is jamesbarras.com. I'll be at Kripalu in Massachusetts in October, and at a place called Hollyhock also in British Columbia in October. And so I love sharing this with people, and amazingly, I'm so blessed that people find it helpful.
So we should give the spelling of your last name so people can get to that website. They may not know that it's B-A-R-A-Z.
That's it, B-A-R-A-Z. Yeah.
Or there's also, isn't there a website for Awakening Joy as well?
Yes, awakeningjoy.info. And the current course, it goes from February through November. It's a 10-month course. There's no failing, no guilt, no pressure. You can't do it wrong. And it's taking each one of these 10 principles one per month and developing that habit of inclining the mind, neurons that fire together, wire together. And people do it with friends, and they do it with groups. There's groups that form and use the book or do the course together. People can just check that out and maybe join the next course beginning of February.
That's great. It's a wonderful tool, and it's nice to know you can be anywhere in the world and have the opportunity to do a program learning these principles with you.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
Thanks.
I love
doing it. It's the most amazing blessing in my life that I get to share with people things that have benefited me so much.
Well, it sounds like the book has opened you to many more possibilities, so you can help share the strategies to bring more joy into your life. And, of course, when you're living your real purpose, it's always a joyful experience. What are some of your next steps along the way that are unfolding?
Well, things seem to be unfolding so so beautifully. I have no idea what's around the corner, but you know, these days I am doing a lot of teaching, and I do the workshops, and I love doing the teaching the meditation as well. So I've got my calendar full through the next year, but you know, writing articles and just sharing what I share, taking some time out for myself, that is essential. Like in December, I'm going to take a good chunk of time to just go inside and regroup and connect, as I've always found so helpful. But life just keeps on unfolding. The more that I trust it and don't try to run the show, my attitude is more like listening to the next steps rather than trying to figure it out. So I do have my calendar for the next year, but who knows what's going to come after.
Who knows, exactly. So, you know, as we're approaching the end of the show, do you want to give us some idea of our little experience and how we can have more joy right now?
Mm-hmm. Sure. As I say, there are 10 steps, and we've only gotten to touch on 4 of them. One is to tune into all the goodness around you, and when you see somebody happy, you know that feeling of cheering somebody on? We love to cheer. We love to go to a movie and cheer the heroine or the hero on, or our loved ones. When you see somebody happy, instead of thinking, oh, why are they happy and I'm not, you can kind of tune into it. It's called sympathetic joy, joy in the happiness of others. Like the Dalai Lama says, if your own happiness is based just on your own well-being, it's very limited. But if it can be activated by the happiness around you, you up your odds by 6 billion to 1. So just kind of tune in. There you are in line on at the supermarket, and you see a child and their parent, and the child is playing, and the parent is smiling. Just kind of tune in. Oh, there's a little bit more happiness in the world, and it's like a free joyride, as I say. So that's one. Look for the happiness around you. Something else that I find helpful is to ask yourself, what do I need right now to thrive? Because often it's in asking the question that our natural wisdom comes out. So instead of running around like a chicken without its head, as we often do, just stop and say, what do I need right now? What will support my well-being? And then learning to listen to that voice of wisdom that's kind and supportive, that says, you might want to do this, or this feels right, or maybe you should stop fretting so much and nourish yourself. So it's really having a very good relationship with yourself, which is one of the 10 steps. Is a very key strategy. Being kind to yourself, and then you can be kind to others. And then the last thing I'd say is keep looking for the good inside and around you. You'll see all the lousy stuff very easily, but if you keep on looking for the good, that's what you'll draw out of others as well as yourself. So that's a main principle that I live by.
Well, I love the thing your mother learned about saying and practicing, I am blessed, because I think that really is the truth that we always need to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
We are all blessed with the lives we have. And it's been a blessing to have you on the show today, James. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I just wish you a ever overflowing life filled with endless joy.
Thank you so much, Cheryl, and it's been a pleasure hanging out with you, and thanks for all the work that you're doing and sharing the same kind of message to all your listeners.
You're very welcome. You have a great day.
Thanks. You
Bye
too.
For now.
Bye.
And we've come to the end of another wonderful conversation. My guest today was James Barras, who is the author of Awakening Joy, 10 Steps That Will Put You on the Road to Real Happiness. Thanks for joining me. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. See you next week. Bye for now.